Some big banks get a $2.3 billion slap in Europe over rate rigging.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From APM in New York, I'm Lizzie O'Leary, in for David Brancaccio, with the global perspective on business and economics. A half dozen big banks like Deutsche Bank and JP Morgan have been hit with a record $2.3 billion fine from the European Commission. That's for colluding to rig two benchmark lending rates that set the price of money between banks, something they were supposed to compete on. Chris Morris is the BBC's Europe correspondent and joins me from Brussels. Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
These fines seem like a fair amount of money. Is this a surprise?
It's the largest antitrust fine that the European Commission has ever imposed in a case of this kind. Why have they done that? Well, because of the scale of the offence. They have ruled that this group of banks, some of the biggest and best-known banks in the world, essentially colluded to form an illegal cartel to profit from derivatives linked to rigged interest rates. The competition commissioner here in Brussels said the most shocking aspect of this was not just the fact that this was going on, but banks that were supposed to be competing with each other were actively colluding to the disadvantage of companies who rely on these interest rates every day.
If you're a consumer, what kind of an impact would this have on you?
I guess the indirect impact is that if you're dealing with a company that was relying on those interest rates to do their business, then if those companies are getting rates which are not as good as they could have been, then presumably those companies are going to put up prices of some of the products and services which you want to buy. So these things do trickle down through the economy. It can sound like it's a million miles away from concerns you have at your own dinner table, but these things do trickle down, and that's why the banks realise now, I guess, that they've been caught out and they have to be held to account.
The BBC's Chris Morris joining me from Brussels. Thank you so much.
Thanks. Nice to talk to you.
Now let's do the numbers. The FT 100 in London is down 0.2%. Stock futures in the U.S. are up, and Japan's Nikkei had a rough day, falling more than 2% on a stronger yen. We're going to talk now about Social Security, not on the big macro national debate level, but on the personal finance one. Like, when should you start taking it? Alan Sloan is a senior editor-at-large for Fortune magazine, and he wrote about this as part of Fortune's annual investor guide. Good morning, Alan.
Good morning, Lizzie.
So when do you think one ought to take Social Security benefits?
Well, there's a really short answer, and it's it depends.
And what does it depend on?
Okay, you can take it any time from when you turn 62 until you turn 70. And part of it depends on whether you're working and making any sort of serious income from work, in which case taking it between 62 and 66 causes endless complications. Then once you turn 66, the question becomes, do you need the money? Are you still working? And when do you think you're going to die? Which is sort of a morbid question, but that's sort of an important question.
The conventional wisdom has been, if you can hold out as long as possible, do that because you get the most money. What do you think?
It's true that you get the biggest monthly payment if you wait until 70. On the other hand, if you wait until 70 and die at 69 and 11 months, you don't get anything. So in the end, what my wife and I decided to do was we pulled the plug at 67, which gave us more than the basic benefit, about 8% more. And my feeling is this way, I've hedged against living long and I've hedged against dying, and it's the best I know how to do.
I'm 37. To me, Social Security seems pretty far off. Explain why I should be paying attention to this.
Well, do you have parents?
Yeah.
That's one reason you should pay attention, because if you have parents, they're probably about my age, and this applies to them. At 37, it's way too early to worry about taking Social Security, but it involves your family and it involves probably some of your older friends, and that's why it should matter to you, because it matters to them.
Alan Sloan is a senior editor at large for Fortune magazine. As always, Alan, it's a pleasure.
Thank you, Lizzie.
If you've missed fake newsman Ron Burgundy this week, well, you're living under a rock. He's played by Will Ferrell and promoting his new movie Anchorman 2, hawking Dodge Durangos, anchoring a real North Dakota newscast, and today Emerson College is renaming one of its actual schools for him for a day. Kate Davidson reports on the logic behind the hype.
The first Anchorman movie did okay, but grossed less than $100 million. Ron Burgundy, though, developed a cult following. Now you'll find him promoting the Dodge Durango, or at least its glove box.
Comfortably fits two turkey sandwiches, six ball-peen hammers, 70 packs of gum.
Keith Simonton is managing editor of IMDb. He says when a character like James Bond used to appear in commercials,
he's driving a certain car or he's drinking a certain beer, but he's not making fun of driving that car or drinking that beer. Plus, also, Burgundy's an idiot.
This kind of advertising is anti-advertising, but it really works.
Porter Bibb is a managing partner at MediaTek Capital. He says Ron Burgundy as an anti-spokesman is genius because promotion is all about social media now, and the antics of a buffoon are highly contagious on our phones. Bibb expects the Anchorman sequel will do much better than the original, precisely because Ron Burgundy can't stay classy. I'm Kate Davidson for Marketplace.
Driverless cars are even closer to reality, especially in Sweden, where Volvo has chosen the city of Gothenburg to test 100 driverless cars. They'll be hooked up to GPS, the city's transit system, cameras, etc. Volvo's CEO unveiled the project yesterday, and this fleet will be coming online to Sweden's second biggest city in 2017. In New York, I'm Lizzie O'Leary with the Marketplace Morning Report. From APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.